Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Lent and Rouge Cycling Podcast, here with Benji Narson. As always, Benji and I in the midst of the LFR Twitter sort of account competition that's every year. Benji, I think, is odds on to win that. I'm not as popular as he is. I reckon you're going to clean it up. Benji, what do you reckon your chances are right now?
I think I've got a... I don't actually see my chances that high. While I had the most preliminary votes to get into the competition, I don't know. I also don't feel like going to the part where you can get more votes by having riders endorse you in the competition. But I'm like, I can't be arsed to do that.
No, I'm not doing it.
It's just fun, but it's not professional.
We need to get Nate Silver, 538, to do some sort of polling analysis to see who's going to win. Anyway, this is a bit delayed because... people came to my door asking for charitable donations for a Christmas raffle here in Andorra. Comment down below whether you think I told them to go away or if I gave them some money. See what people think of my... That's the poll for my public perception, Benji. But anyway, without further ado, Team Bike Exchange, Jayco, they're adding a, this is what happens, they add another Jerry Ryan company. That's what they're called in 2022. Men and women's, we also have in the middle of this an interview with Kel O'Brien, who's one of their incoming Neo Pros, young Australian lead out man, slash, I think he can be a bit more versatile. So stay tuned for that as well. First, we'll do the men's team, evaluate their 2021 season, then transfers, then predict their teams for various major events, and then some hot takes before we get into Kel's interview and the women's with Benji. 2021 was not the same as sort of the peak years of Bike Exchange or Green Edge or Mitchelton, when stage wins galores with Yates and Trentin, or even better than that, when they won the Vuelta. They had two World Tour wins, Chaves Catalunya, Yates Giro Stage 19. Yates came third in the Giro GC as well because they shortened the Cortina stage. Otherwise, I don't think he would have. He won Tour of the Alps, and there's some other and a stage there. They're their only dot pro wins. And other than that, there's like 6-5 wins at like 2-1 level, Hungary and Saska and Slovenska. It's got to be a below par season, Benji.
Yeah, certainly. I think I re-listened to our podcast of last year, and we were aiming at roughly 20 victories for this team. It didn't come close to that. 9 is just not good enough. And of those, only 2 are World Tour, like you mentioned. And yes, winning a stage in the Giro is good, but it's also what we expect from someone like Simon Yates. I would have been more surprised if he didn't win a World Tour race this season. Then Chaves, he had a bit of a resurrection in Catalunya, but it didn't last too much longer than Catalunya, to be honest. So, yeah, it is what we expected from Chaves. I didn't expect too much more personally, and I'm already surprised that he won that stage in Catalunya as well, personally. But for the rest of the season, you're right. And one name that's missing in the winning books is quite clear to me. It's Michael Matthews.
I know, and he did a lot of hard World Tour racing, obviously did the Tour de France, and he definitely didn't do – actually, well, he did Swiss, and then he ran into MVDP, Paris-Nice, all the stages, like we spoke about for Laporte, Benji, they were either pure sprint stages against Bennett, Pedersen, and Boll, or they were like pretty tough uphill finishes where – he got beaten by Roglic. He had really good form at Charubla as well. I think what did he do? 69 race days, virtually all of it, I think. All of it was at World Tour level except for Brabant Pale. That's insane. And Grosse Prize de Canton at Aargau at Schelling one, I think. So hard schedule, definitely not a send races one. He's missing Catalunya, where I think the sprint level was low, or Romandy, those sort of races. But he still accumulated a lot of points as well. I'm of the view, Benji, that Matthews is still really, really good, and that people will probably think Magnus Cort is now a better rider than Michael Matthews. Magnus Cort had better results in terms of wins, of course, but
I believe Cort is a better rider than Michael Matthews.
Really?
Yep.
I don't know about that. I think Matthews just targets races in the wrong way. I think
also possible.
If you look at his Cuyera time and where he finished in that GC group, I think he's just targeting the wrong way. But anyway.
Yeah, you're right.
Simon Yates, 68 race day, some curious races where he did Giro, TDF where he DNF'd, then went to the Olympics, then did San Sebastian, then did Burgos to not do the Vuelta. Really, really odd from Simon Yates. And I think, what do you think's missing, Benji? I mean, it's just, especially with Esteban Chavez going out the door, like, is the problem that they're looking at Matthews, they don't have a sprinter. They don't have a Ewan replacement from years ago, and they're trying to use Matthews as both their puncher, their classics man, and their sprinter when he's kind of none of those things.
Yeah, certainly. And I think they're, goal in their team is perhaps to use a Caden Groves in the future as their sprinter, but I currently don't see it based on the performances he's delivered over the years. And I feel like Yates's podium at the Giro is a good result. Like, let's be honest, podium at the Giro is a good result. And yep. I don't expect much more from Yates than podiuming Grand Tour in a year. And a few stage wins in Worlds, perhaps. He did one this year. That's a bit on the low end for Simon Yates in my eyes. He can win more than one. But we shouldn't expect Simon Yates to win a Grand Tour right now against Slovenians or against a Bernal that is not having back pain. So, I don't know. I feel like we shouldn't expect too much more from him. I think that podium is good for him. But then I indeed look at the rest of the team, and there's a lot of talent that I feel went to bike exchange, grew a tiny bit, had one breakout race. I think Hamilton, for example, had a bit of a breakout race. Was it Bologna a year or two ago or last year?
Tirreno, he won a stage, didn't he?
Yeah, he did win something in Tirreno as well, or did well at Tirreno at some point, I think. But Rob Stannard, for example, he also grew, and that's the rider that didn't have that thing, that victory that was like, okay, he's on the plateau now, he's there, and he's obviously leaving right now. Is there a problem with their development of their younger riders, or is that something I'm imagining?
Well, there's no problem with young Australians that are pretty good who've been out of contract. I mean, we look at Jay Vine. I'm not sure if he got a call from Bike Exchange to step up to their team, World Tour level. And there's plenty of races like Tour of the Alps, etc., or Burgos, which they can send him to and relieve a bit of the burden on a Simon Yates. So I don't know. I feel like there's plenty of Australian talent dotted around, and they don't even need a development team. I'm just curious sometimes, seeing like the signing of Jan Maas instead of Jay Vine, it's just really, really odd to me. But yeah, I think they're missing a peak sprinter. They think Groves will be that guy. Remains to be seen. He's only 22. I think he's developing okay. I think, you know, he's quite young. Matthews, I'd be interested to see if they use him in a different fashion next year and not as like a pure bunch sprinter. And they just don't, as you said, Benji, they don't have other GC options other than Simon Yates with Chavez going out the door. They have no one else I really can see apart from Housen at, say, Tour de Hungary that can really be a second guy to go to the Vuelta or the Giro. Oh, sorry, the Tour if Yates goes to the Giro. And that's fine. That's fine if your team is set up to hunt stages like EFR, or sprint like in breaks, or sprint stages like De Koenigsegg, who often don't send a GC rider pretty much at all. Lucas Hamilton was supposed to be that guy. I don't see it. He's 25, turning 26 in February. This year wasn't great. I don't see it. They sort of picked him over Haig, it seemed, and I think Haig is looking like the better one. But into their transfers now, Benji. Yep. See what you think about them. Out the door is Nieve, which is pretty good, going to Caja Rural. I quite like that for him. Bookwalter retired.
Love it.
Science to Astana on like a one-year pre-retirement deal. Barnabas Peak, I think they're letting go. He's unsigned. Rob Stannard, no surprise to anybody, one of the young talents, Benji, out the door. I mean, we predicted that back in back Andalusia, didn't we?
Yeah, certainly, because people that don't remember Andalusia, there was a sprint where Rob Stannard basically got crashed by MP, and eventually What was the reaction of Bike Exchange to that? Basically that he had to apologize, Rob Stanner, to the person that crashed him?
Correct. He had to apologize for being angry at Impey for crashing him out and taking away his first professional win because, you know, Impey obviously a veteran of Bike Exchange back in the day. So if I was a young rider seeing the team selling me out like that, I'd be leaving as well. Other talent that's going out the door is Esteban Chavez, who I think pretty sure Chavez is – is he older than Nairo? He looks, you know, obviously looks younger, but he's 31, but he's been dealing with sickness for a few years and didn't have the consistency this year. I don't know what the plan was at the tour, very odd tour, but he did have a good result in Catalunya on both the mountaintop finishes, second and first there, but just lost a lot on the TT. He did Flesh and Liège, 8th and 14th. He did a weird schedule. Like he's good on the longer climbs, and Basque, I think, didn't suit him as much. Did Swiss, but yeah, the tour, Benji, I'm looking at, he just hovered around like 12th or 13th. And I remember I was on a call on the Detour podcast with Dan Jones, who used to do the fabulous Bike Exchange YouTube videos. And it was with Matt White as well. And I was like, is Esteban going to lose some time and go for stages? Because he sat Benji in this, what should we call it? We've got to start calling it something, Benji, the 10th to 14th zone of irrelevancy, where you can't get in the break.
Yes.
You can't get in the break to win stages, but you're also not top 10. I'm open to your suggestions for that name.
Yes, I'm actually on board with calling that something, because that is a position where you have to make the decision of, okay, can I enter the top 10 or not? If not, what's the point in getting 11th or 12th in this Grand Tour? Let me go in the break, lose some time, and perhaps losing time might offer me the opportunity of getting more in the break, leading me to an actual top 10 eventually. So all that stuff can work together very well in the end, and that was not really the case there. I feel like I do recall him trying to get in some breaks, and
he did,
just
he did.
Not working. But I just got the feeling that, in general, I think that he's better than the year before, but he's nowhere near what he was in the past, of course. But you think that there's a possibility that Chavez comes back to the level that he was before?
Chavez, I think, can win Giro stages, Tour de France stages, and the right stages. He, Catalunya showed that, like, he danced away from Ineos on Portenay. He chased back. Actually, he was coming very strong back to Yates on Volta 2000, the stage before, where he hadn't responded initially. If he'd gone with Valverde, Kuss, and Yates, maybe he makes it and contests the win. I think his climb is 30-minute power, and certainly to altitude is still excellent and capable of winning on the biggest stages. I just think – so that's why he's a bit of a loss, but he's out the door. So that's still one of their World Tour wins out the door, and some other good results, which I don't see being replaced by Lucas Hamilton. And what I don't know, Benji, is do EF pay more than Bike Exchange? Like,
I don't know.
Maybe he just wanted to leave. I don't know. Bit odd.
One thing that I do notice is that if you look at what Chavez did in the past, for example, we look at his second in the Giro and third in the Vuelta, both in 2016. And if we take a look at that year, that was obviously his best year, winning Lombardia and winning Emilia all in one year as well. So definitely can't complain that year. But what's noticeable is that those Grand Tours had Nibali winning in the Giro ahead of Chavez and Valverde. Kreiswijk, who was the best time trialist, had that issue, of course, where he crashed on top of that climb. And it's noticeable that if you've got Nibali, Chavez, and Valverde in the top three, those are not necessarily the riders that you look at and say, those are the best time trialists of GC riders. And look at the Vuelta, and you've got that being the Grand Tour where Froome was beaten for that top three. But outside of that top three, there's also riders that aren't necessarily the best time trialists. Is that perhaps something that changed over the years? Or was that just a year that time trialing was not as important in the Giro and the Vuelta, where he was able to strike true, and now it's just more important in races and it's not happening? Do you think that that might lead him to getting into the Giro for EF?
Has to go to Giro, right? With Venny openly saying time trials shouldn't count and reducing it to 17Ks. It would make a lot of sense. But he's out the door. So the guys coming in, let's see if they can replace his level or say Stannard's projected level is only 23. We have my personal favorite, Lawson Craddock, doing a swap. So this was really surprising to me, Benji. Craddock leaving EF. American. Okay, Olympics, yeah, he sold me out in the TT, cost me my mortgage. That's fine. But that wasn't on EF's time. he at the Vuelta, he was so good in that break with Magnus Kort. I don't know, like, he's still a good domestique, still a great guy that fits their strategy in terms of being that guy we always talk about. You know, it sounds simple, but it's not, having that guy with the potential stage winner you have in the break to do the dirty work. He's only 29. I'm really surprised. I think that's a good signing, depending on the money. Although he's obviously, maybe he's already lost a little bit because he was photographed with the giant and then got a termination notice, but then wasn't fired, so it's still fine now. Jan Maas from Leopard Pro Cycling, 25-year-old Dutch rider who has been at Conti level for a long time. I don't see much upside in him, but Bike Exchange do a lot of Saskatoon, Hungary races where I think he's just going to go to those races, which are frankly they're all 2-1 sort of level. Sobrero, talented from Astana. I thought it was weird, but good for Bike Exchange. He's young. Jesus David Pena, I don't know too much about Colombian. Alexander Bormer, I need some help from you, Benji. I think you know about him. Campbell Stewart is a Kiwi from Black Spoke who has a decent result. And Kel O'Brien's not showing, but he did a stagiaire this year for a few races. He's a lead out man as well. So what stands out from you amongst those riders, Benji, particularly the ones I'm not familiar with?
Yeah, so firstly, when we look at the transfers that you mentioned, that Jesus David Pena guy, you can't see the results too much that he did on PCS because his biggest race was a U23 race. You can find that on First Cycling if you want. And there he won the U23 Tour of Colombia for the second time, the Vuelta a Colombia. And he did that ahead of his teammates basically this year. So his teammates were second, third, and fifth, which I don't know if that says anything about the quality of the field, but it shows that one team is dominating and that the team might as well have decided who of the team has won that race as a consequence. But if you look at the history of that race, who are the winners of that? We've got in the past, last year, Diego Camargo. He's now riding for EFFR, call correctly. Jimenez, don't know what happened to him. Sergio Martinez, not sure what happened to him. Cano, I remember that guy from riding for a Colombian Conti or pro Conti team, probably Conti team. And then the years before, Carapaz, Lopez, Miguel Angel Lopez, a few years in between with riders that did not make it at all, Betancourt, Fabio Duarte, and now. So some riders that we do know that did make it, but it's a 50-50 chance that he makes it, like based on what I'm seeing here in this list. And with the rest of his results, I think 51st at the Giro U23, I'm like, it's not looking like it will. But I hope for him that he does, but it just doesn't look like it right now. So,
do you reckon he's getting paid more than, like, what's the difference in salary between a guy like this and Maarten van den Berg, the Dutch guy who's going to EF, or Steinhauser to EF?
I think there's a big difference.
Do you reckon? Like, those guys can't be on that much.
I mean, there's a big difference perhaps the other way around. Like, this guy here, Jesus David Pena.
Minimum.
Next to the risk as a rider, you also have the risk of this guy is moving to Europe for a bit.
Yep.
And in a new environment, perhaps he hates it. You've got Contreras, Rodrigo Contreras, who had a real issue with having to move to Europe and be in that environment, and as a consequence, had trouble making it through that barrier. And I think that's something, an extra risk that adds onto it, and perhaps a reason to pay less for a rider like this. Then again, you're probably going to have to invest in accommodation for the kid. I don't know.
I mean, if Bike Exchange do know about bringing guys over who aren't European, but it's usually Australians, and then the guys like Chavez are on, you know, they're on enough money that their lives should be relatively easy here, one would think. But yeah, that's a good point you make, Benji, about moving over, etc.
When it comes to Balmer, I feel like he's the kind of rider that is pretty fast after hilly races. So he's basically a Italian classics kind of rider with a punch, is based on the results is what I can figure out on him personally. And he's got a decent time trial, I think. I'm not sure. I can't really deduct that from the results, but just a guy that can get over hills, versatile rider. And I recall him getting second in last stage of Ronde de l'Isère, which was behind Hayes Leemreize, who basically cleaned up that race. But certainly a race where youngsters do shine, and I think that Balmer has some talent.
Definitely worth a World Tour contract, I think, when you look at that Giro de Belvedere result near third behind Ayuso. I don't mind. There's upside in him. The Stewart looks quite good, And then Kranich is a notable, like a proven commodity in World Tour. Sobrero, though, I mentioned briefly, I was surprised. Like, I would have thought Astana's like an Italian, basically the closest we have to an Italian team in World Tour. He was good in TT at the Giro d'Italia. He actually climbed well at Tour of Slovenia behind Pogacar. I know it's not a huge race, but that was behind Pogacar, Ulisi, etc. I worry that his TT is going to move back now, Benji, because Durbridge does good power and not great results all the time. I don't know. Like, what do you think they want from Sobrero? Do they see him as a potential GC guy?
I don't know, but I'd love to see it attempted in smaller races, because we had Tour de Slovenia, where he was one of the last five riders on those climbing stages. But obviously, Pogacar then slapped him completely. But I do believe that he's got the ability of getting over hills. He's got the ITT to go for solos. Perhaps he should go in breakaways on hilly terrain and do what others do, like a Mohoric, attack away just before the climb.
Yep.
Make sure you've got a gap before the climb, being able to climb well as well, and then able to solo away on the flat afterwards. So that kind of stuff, I think that could work. But I don't know what is the plan with him. Is he going to be supportive as a domestique? It's also possible. I think that a rider like Sobrero could probably do that. Perhaps one thing we look across and don't realize is that perhaps team riders just want to go to a different team at a certain point, like Craddock.
Yeah, exactly.
He's been at EF for so long, ever since the days they were still called Cannondale. So perhaps he just needs to change an environment because he feels like he doesn't get the opportunities that he wants to get because he's too...
I heard that. I think they let him go.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's what some rumors I heard, which, yeah, surprising. Are we starting, or do we need to really enforce the free Mezgets bandwagon, Benji? Kuss has been free perhaps too much. Is it Mezgets that needs to be freed in 2022?
Nah.
Nah?
I don't believe in it. I really don't believe in it. He's still an outsider sprinter in the same way that Matthews is. Either way you choose, you're going to be likely beaten by better sprinters unless it's an uphill sprint. I think the last time Mezgec had his good years was it a UAE Tour in 2018, 2017, 2019? Tour of Bologna, I think, where he won two stages in 2019.
I thought his 2020 was really good.
I don't remember much of his 2020 outside of just getting second somewhere in the Tour.
He won some reduced. I think he's a decent climbing sprinty boy that needs to be freed in breaks. I think he can win sprints. Like, I think Magnus Cort would have not have been happy to see Mezgets in the group rather than Bagioli and Simmons. I think that's someone. Anyway, I'm going to go through their 2022 roster list before we pick their teams for 2022 major events. But before we do that, mention our show partner, Lacole, who produced performance cycling apparel. Christmas is in 20 days, somewhat alarmingly, can't believe it. And they have a special Christmas gift guide on the Lacole website. The link is down below. They produce top-notch performance cycling apparel, and they've got you covered, whether you're in the Southern Hemisphere, where it's hot for Christmas, which I'm kind of thinking about going back, or if you're in the cold Northern Hemisphere winter. They've got stocking fillers to luxury gifts for discerning riders, so make the cyclist in your life smile on Christmas Day. So thanks, Lacole, for supporting the podcast. You can check them out at lacole.cc. Rattle through their team just so it's fresh in everyone's mind for 2022. Bulmer, Bauer, Bewley, Coglioni, young Italian Craddock, Durbridge, Alex Edmondson, Sagabu, Garmai, Groves, Hamilton, Hepburn, Howson, Almond Grundahl, Janssen, almost forgotten about, Christoph Juhl, Jensen, just got extended, Kangert, Konishev, Maas, Matthews, Meyer, Mezgets, O'Brien, Pena, Schultz, Callum Scottson, Dion Smith, Matteo Sobrero, Campbell Stewart, Simon Yates. I think it's missing some really the top talent. But anyway, Benji, they're cobbled classics. It's a bit thin on the ground, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like it's thin on the ground, definitely. And if you look at the team that they have in 2022, then I think that, it's very hard. Janssen, Amund Grøndahl Janssen is one of the riders in there.
That's why he got signed.
Matthews, I would dare to put in those races, but then you're like, okay, is he going to do the cobble races and Amstel and the Hill Classics, or what are you going to send them to? And then you have to kind of balance it out and see what fits them best throughout. And next to that, we've got Oh boy. Jack Bauer, I guess. Luke Durbridge.
Yeah.
Edmondson?
He's a climber, isn't he?
I think he did some cobble race well in the past. I vaguely remember that at some point. He won the Tour of Flanders for juniors in 2015 or 2023.
True. He's 27. Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's thin. And this is why I give a little bit of sympathy for Matthews. I think he's relied on for everything. He's relied on to win bunch sprints in the Tour, to be the classics, cobble classics guy, to be their Ardennes guy. And you say, oh, well, Wout van Aert does that. I'm like, Wout van Aert's a fucking freak. Like, and also, I would say even Wout van Aert's classics took a pay the price for that a little bit. Like, it's tough to have one rider, you know, that's responsible for all those things to be on, to win at that top, top level. So, yeah, it's Matthews, I think, is their best option as a leader, Benji. And would you, if you were Matthews in Bike Exchange, would you have him focus on Cobble Classics or the Ardennes? Where do you see? I think, like, Brabants is his best. Brabants and Amstel, I think he can win. I just don't see RVB.
Yeah, Brabants and Amstel and
MSR.
I think LBL is too difficult for him.
Agree.
MSR, he should definitely be there. I think in MSR, he can, in RVV, he can make the second group. But I don't think he can make the first group or the first group of attackers that got away. He's kind of got the same problem as a Christoph in that race, really, where he gets dropped on the climbs usually. But then again, I think that Matthews is a better climber than Christoph, just to make that clear before people notice that comment and think I'm saying something else. I think that for the cobble race, it's just not that powerful. And I think, didn't he have trouble at Sunweb because of a cobble race that was public info, something about somewhere where he couldn't ride a omloop or something? There was this whole thing a few years ago.
I'd believe it. Whatever it was, problems with DSM.
I think he couldn't ride Omlo because he forgot to do his homework for the race.
That's right, you're right, yeah. Well, speaking of Omlo, I think he should do Omlo. I think he should do MSR. I think he should do Gent-Wevelgem. I agree with Benji. I think he should skip Liège and Flèche, and he should do Amstel, and we'll get to our... So he's their leader for the Cobble Classics. In terms of young talent for that, maybe send Kel O'Brien just to get a taste for it, and Craddock. What about Giro Benji? It's got to be Simon Yates. It's perfect for him.
Yeah, Simon Yates, and attempt for a podium again. That's what I'd say, perhaps. Yeah, obviously, you would try to win, but I feel it's more likely that he's going to end up podium in that race, really. And what do you do as a surrounding for him? I think that Simon Yates is the kind of rider that I don't feel like does need so much support, right? I feel like he's the kind of GC rider that just sticks in the group with other riders, but that makes me want to think you would put a few riders in there for the breakaway.
Yeah, for the Giro, I'm going with Matthews again, Benji. I think there's so many parkour in this race that suits him. I think the Giro is the best option for him to go for stage wins, and I think Bike Exchange should really try and knock the Giro out of the park. It's going to be maybe a weaker sprint field. Maybe you don't have the Wout van Aert and MVDPs of this world who, Colbrelli probably won't do it, who make it tough in a climbing course with a sprint at the end. I think Matthew should go. And if Pidcock is going to do, I think Matthew should basically match Pidcock's plan of going from classics to then Giro and then see how the first week goes, I think.
What are you going to do with Matthews after the Giro? Are you going to choose Tour or Vuelta?
I would then do... I'm saying you shouldn't be over-raced, but I'm going to say this. I don't know if the Tour de France, it's a tough one. And then where does Lucas Hamilton go? I think they'd probably try again with him at the Tour. I don't know. I would honestly just go for stages at the Tour with them. I'd probably maybe send Dion Smith. Dion Smith, sixth at Milan San Remo last year, good in the Italian sort of flatter classics. Their Tour, that's where you got me, Benji. I don't know.
Like, Dion Smith feels like the kind of guy that you send to the Vuelta as your sprinter.
I would send Groves to the Vuelta.
If you don't set Matthews, would you?
Yeah, I'd send Groves to the Vuelta with, I'd say it's time to step up, go to the Vuelta with a lead-out train, see how you go. That's what I would do with Groves. personally. And then Sobrera, sorry, should go to the Giro. Collioni is Italian, therefore, by law, as Benji said, last pod must go to the Giro. I would send a breakaway sort of team to the Tour. Maybe even Damien Howson. Does he ever do the Tour?
I have no bloody clue if Howson does a Tour.
He rarely does. He's done it. Last time he did the Tour was in 2018. He got fourth. I think he's like not a bad climber, Howson, against not great competition. So I don't know. I just go for stages of the Tour and breaks. And then we haven't seen the Vuelta parkour, Benji, and then maybe let Lucas Hamilton have a go. Vuelta, we don't know. I would send Groves. Is there anyone here you see? Yeah, that's what I was going
to
ask.
Or do you send them to the Tour for stage wins?
Probably. He's done that before, I think.
That's never going to happen, you know, because he's going to try and stay in GC and then he's going to ruin the chances of going for stages. And by the time he realizes that he's ruined the chances to go for stages, he's probably all the way down in GC but doesn't have stages left.
In 2019, he did Andalusia, Paris-Nice, Catalunya, and then he did Giro fully for GC, and then his TT was terrible. But he came eighth and he had a couple second and third. And then Tour de France, he actually did go for stages. He won two in 2019. That was the year when Trentin won one as well.
Yeah.
I reckon that's the play. And then see how the rest of the year goes. Italian classics, Sobrero, the eights maybe. I don't know. But yeah, as you can tell, we're not probably too high on this team. Over under World Tour wins this year. Like I'm setting it at 4.5, Benji. I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the under as well.
I don't trust them to do the schedule that we've proposed. I feel like we could see a lot of Michael Matthews sort of seconds again in like the Vuelta on impressive performances, but not on a terrain where he's the best again. So I'm worried for this team. What do you think? They've had issues with funding last year. It's the Jerry Ryan passion project. They've not, you know, Storer, Haig, Vine, got all these young Australians not on bike exchange. What do you see that's missing that they really, really need right now?
Manuela Fundacion. It has to be that. Nah, like, it feels like they don't have a very complete team on all terrains. They've got leaders like Matthews. They've got basically no real leader for the couple races, let's be honest. And then we look at the Grand Tours and we talk about Simon Yates and then we're like, okay, well, who should we send that support? And I'm already thinking and I already have to go through the names. It's not like someone comes up in my mind and I'm like, oh, this guy should 100% be the super domestique of Simon Yates in that race. I don't have that feeling with this team. And I don't know, it feels like that's for all the races that they have throughout the calendar, except perhaps the Hill Classics, where I do think a Matthews and Amstel is pretty strong in that aspect. But I feel like we're missing a strong team around the leaders and we're missing a few leaders. We're missing a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely, I don't know, Nick, for Simon Yates support, I guess Howson, Nick Schultz is kind of okay. But yeah, the young guys they do have aren't of a quality where I think, okay, they're going to be... Kangert's also not a bad Mount Domestique on this day either. But yeah, it's definitely not a broad squad and it's definitely missing a premium sprinter. And they're hoping Caden Groves will be that. Maybe he will. But yeah, it's...
Do they lose every single one of their leaders after a few years in the same way that Ewan left them as the best sprinter?
Exactly.
You've got Adam Yates leaving them instead of Simon Yates. In my opinion, Adam Yates was a better one-week racer and I feel like could be a better Grand Tour rider than Simon Yates. Sorry if I... Do you disagree or agree with that?
I think Adam Yates is better.
Okay, and there was another name I had in my head that did the same a few years ago or left, but I can't think about it now. But Caleb. I feel like that's a pattern that we see here as well. And perhaps his budget as the issue, like you mentioned, the fact that they have so many issues finding sponsors and as a consequence, maybe don't have the budget that other teams have. I think it was rumored to be 10 mil or something. But yeah. It's not the biggest number in the world. But I feel like they could probably do a bit better than what they have right now.
Yeah, or just, I mean, as I said, I keep saying it over and over again, I don't think Jay Vine would have cost 500K a year. So, but yeah. As you mentioned, Benny, people potentially, these are people out of contract, Matthews, Yates, Mezgetz, Durbridge, Deion Smith, Howson, Lucas Hamilton, Schultz, Groves, they're all out of contract. Now, they might extend, but yeah, a big risk. Simon Yates, I don't know if he... Depends if other teams will take him because he had that suspension previously for the TUE thing.
I've got a question for you. If Simon Yates is not in this team, is this a pro Conti team?
Without Chavez, yeah, it is. Like, I think it's not great. And I think it's good they got some of the young guys like Ballmer and Stewart and Sobrero is great. But yeah, I just... They're kind of not ready yet either. I know. I'm trying not to be too negative, but we're under. I think you went under 4.5, did you? I went under.
Yeah, I went under.
Okay, hot takes for this team. I think Michael Matthews actually does come back and wins. I think he wins 2 World Tour races next year.
It's already half of the allowed for you because he's at under 4.5.
Yeah. And I think Lucas Hamilton doesn't top 10 a Grand Tour, and I think Simon Yates... I think Simon Yates doesn't podium a Grand Tour.
Okay.
I think Matthews wins Milano-San Remo.
Okay. Those are indeed quite literally hot takes. I believe that Caden Groves does not win a sprint this year.
Oh, no way. That is a hot one, though. I'll give it to you.
I believe that Olav Koy is a better rider right now, and he's not even remotely where he needs to be.
Whew.
Yeah, sorry. If you look at this year, did he win a race?
He won a prologue at Slovakia.
I said win a sprint. So technically he didn't win a sprint in 2021 either. So is it that hot of a take either? I feel like he's a glorified Conti sprinter.
He's 22.
You're right. But...
He won Tour of Qinghai Lake and 2 stages of Tour of Fuzhou.
Tour of Qinghai Lake. Sorry, but that's basically Maresco territory. But then again, Maresco is in basically a World Tour team, Alpecin, right now.
Yeah, unbelievable.
That's quite funny, though, but...
That's a hot take. I'll say that is hot.
Okay.
Because he'll probably go to, like, Saskatoon, Slovenia, Slovakia, yeah. Etc. Yeah, okay.
I hope he does well, but I don't see it.
What about people leaving? Will Simon Yates leave? Or Matthews? I think they both stay.
I think they stay as well. What I do want to add as my hot take is that I think that in the Vuelta, Caja Rural will arrive with Nieve as GC rider, and Nieve will be better in GC than any rider at Bike Exchange.
I agree. Or will win more races. Nieve will probably win a World Tour, like win a Vuelta break or something. So yeah. I agree. I agree with that one. Anyway, those are our hot takes. Let us know if you think it's going to be over or under those sort of wins we said. And hopefully Bike Exchange, as an Australian, will have a bounce back season, potentially with some of the young talent they have brought in, the likes of which Kel O'Brien, who we interviewed beforehand. Hope you enjoyed this interview with him, the lead out man for Caden Groves, and I think could be a good ruler himself on a variety of terrain. Welcome to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, Kel and O'Brien. Kel's 23, joining Team Bike Exchange, I believe, on a 2-year deal. Formerly a track rider, he won world champion in the Team Pursuit all the way back in 2017, and then recently third in the Team Pursuit at the Tokyo Olympic Games. That's what I wanted to talk about first, Kel. Because of the delay of the Olympics, did that delay, like, was this always the plan for you to go to World Tour, you know, straight after Tokyo? And did the delay effectively push that back a year for you as well?
Yeah, I think always for me, the plan was to get onto the road once my Olympic ambitions were over. I was always planning to go onto the road, but maybe the extra year sort of gave me a bit more time to sort of build up my endurance, I guess, and actually be ready to go into the World Tour after Tokyo. So it didn't delay anything for me. I think it just gave me a bit more time.
Yeah, and for this is a road cycling mainly podcast. Could you explain to people maybe your role in the Team Pursuit team, what sort of like physical requirements there are, how you maybe differ to someone like Welsford or Lee Howard in that setup?
Okay. So the Team Pursuit is it's a 4 kilometer race, so fairly short in comparison to road cycling. It's very high power, very it's essentially a long drawn out sprint, really. I think for me, my role sort of gets split up between the back end roles of the event. Welsford is one of our fastest guys, and he always finishes strong. So we team up quite well in the back end together. But over the years, for me in the Team Pursuit, my role has sort of changed. Like I ride most of the wheels, first, second, third, fourth wheel. And I guess that's sort of what I brought to the team, was a bit of like, you know, if something went wrong for someone and they couldn't, you know, they got sick or injured, then I could fill in those shoes.
Have you still got the blonde hair? Is that why the beanie's on? Have you still got the blonde hair?
No. I cut it all off, eh? But no, it's just cold over here now.
Yeah. So where are you? Are you in Girona or in Europe at the moment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in Girona at the moment. Yeah, but it's nice and cold, that's for sure.
I'll put up some, I'm in Kelson planning. I'll put up some photos for the video version of I'm in Andorra, where I think you're coming soon, and it's beyond cold. There's like a knee-deep snow outside my house now, so Girona doesn't look as bad. It looks great to me, actually. But so you are continuing doing some track work now. You're doing the UCI Track Champions League. You've done 6-day in the past. This seems to be like a competitor to the 6-day competition, which is like a track event in the off season, which can get some of the road guys doing it, like the Viviani, Cavendish, Merku you've seen before. The UCI Track Champions League, I think, gets rid of the Madison, and it's like a different format. How's that been for you, the different format, having done both the 6-day and the Track Champions League? For spectator-wise, it's better. I prefer the Track Champions League because I hate watching the Madison. I can't understand what's going on. But as a competitor, what's it been like?
Oh, it's been good. Yeah, obviously it clashes a little bit with the 6-day season, which it's been a little bit of a shame to see a lot of the 6 days sort of fall away since the pandemic. But the program is very, very different. Like, it's a super short, condensed 3-hour program. In terms of endurance events, they're like, you know, 1 5-minute race and another 12-minute race or 15-minute race or whatever. So they're pretty short. It's a lot of like travel and then like unpacking bikes and getting ready for a pretty short evening of racing, but it's super exciting. And luckily, like, the crowd has been really, really good at these events, and I think it's taken off well. And I guess, like you say, it's pretty easy to follow. You know, it's just a short series of, you know, 5 weekends of racing. You accumulate points, and whoever's on top at the end, you know, wins. And but yeah, I mean, in comparison, it's so different to the 6 days, but it's been really good, I think, to get it off the ground this year, and hopefully next year will be a bit better again.
Our Antipodean compatriot Corbin Strong's been doing pretty well at it. How do you reckon he's at Israel in 3 years? Like, you see, a lot of the Australians or new Kiwis don't get huge hype like maybe an Italian or a Spanish guy. How do you reckon he's 21? You reckon he's ready to be competitive at like some of those Italian 1-1 sprints that Caden's been doing? Like, what do you think for Corbin? Because he's been doing well at the track.
Yeah, for sure. He's I think he's an understated talent for sure. I mean, I think you sometimes can forget just how young some people are. I mean, you know, we have so many super talents now on the road that are so young, and he's no exception. I think, like, he's 21. He's just signed for 3 years with an awesome team, and he's going to have a great lead out to be a part of as well. In terms of like the 1-day races and stuff, I haven't really seen too much of him on the road. But I know that he can probably climb a lot better than you would think.
Okay.
So for sure, he's a pretty lightweight sprinter. So I think it'd be very interesting to see how he handles the load of the year as well. Coming from a track background, the endurance load next year will be interesting to see how he handles it. But for sure, he's got a big punch at the end of races.
What do you think in your role is at Bike Exchange? And I know it's a lead out for Caden, I saw in a press release, but a bit more specific than that, is it last man, second last man? Because I've seen people that follow the channel for a long time. I did a video on Kellen Wellsford, who's going to DSM at the Bay Crits back in I can't remember how long ago it was, 2020 or 2019. You guys were on Lexus Blackburn. This is not World Tour racing, but there's nothing on in December, January. And you did a lead out for him there when he won. I think Nick White overcooked the last corner. Will you be, so that was a last man role. Is that your big guy? You can do a good last 750 meters. Is that where you think you slot in? Or is it like a Seneschal, talking about quick steps, second last man, Ballerini sort of role?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really gotten into much specifics with the coaches and stuff like that around that. And I imagine a bit of that will come down to form. Having not raced in the World Tour, I'm not, I don't really know where I sit. But for sure, naturally for me, I've been a lead out for Wellsford, last man for Wellsford and other riders for a few years now. So I think it's somewhere where I'd like to fit in. The last man is a good job, and I think I can do it well. But yeah, I suppose it all depends on how I come into the season, and I am looking forward to getting in amongst with the lead out group for Caden and potentially some other sprinters as well, Campbell Stewart as well, another young Kiwi guy. He's super super fast, definitely underestimated as well.
What about other guys who are, I don't know, Jensen Plowright? He's already doing pretty good in some of these sort of U23 races over here. Do you reckon do you expect to see that sort of guy, or any other names from sort of Australia, New Zealand around the crit scene that you've been around that you think will be in World Tour in two, three, 4 years?
For sure. Jensen's definitely got something special, and hopefully we can see him in the Pro Tour. I know he's going to be in Europe next year. I think apart from that, there's a few younger guys. Pat Eddy, I think he might be coming over to ride DSM development team, maybe something like that. A few strong guys like that are definitely coming out of Australia, and hopefully more and more we see them, in the developing races before World Tour as well, getting that exposure. I reckon we'll see a few really strong guys come out in the next sort of 3 years.
And you were on Inform TM Make, rode for them for a little bit. They seem to be, I think they brought Garen's on as a development pathway coordinator to be that bridge between an Australian development team or continental team and racing in Europe, because unfortunately, or just the way it is, it's hard to get a World Tour contract unless you say Lucas Plapp without some European results or some big track results. Or Bike Exchange traditionally have been the team where they are more familiar with the Australians, and so they look at the Australian results a little bit more. Or Berwick, or there's the Herald Sun Tour where you've got to get a result against the European teams. But without that racing in the last couple of years in Australia, it's been really tough to get exposure. What if Berwick had been 2 years older? There's no Herald Sun Tour. Israel don't see him. That's the sort of stuff I think about. So Inform seem to be doing a pretty good job. But do you know your program for next year yet? Or is that, are you going on camp in a week or something where that sort of thing is going to be discussed?
Yeah, so I think next week at the team camp, that stuff will be discussed and sort of come out a little bit more. I mean, I'm a Neo pro, so I don't want to step on anyone's toes too early and ask the wrong questions. But yeah, I think next week I'll have a bit more of an idea. But I guess by the sounds of it, it'll be a Middle East start to the year, hopefully in that lead out for the sprint group.
What about TT though? I mean, we're speaking a lot about lead out. Surely TT is something that you, with the right setup, you're over 190 centimeters, so you can do the extra longer extension. Surely, are you already, I think, got what, third Australian TT champs behind Durbridge, not too far behind. I think you told me last year you did some obscene 10-minute power, like 500 watts for 10 minutes or something stupid. Is that something you're also going to be focused on as well? Because I reckon, like, you look at, like Caden, for example, he won that prologue. There's a lot of those sort of 5 to 12-minute efforts around the place that, unless you're going up against Bissiger and Ghana, who aren't at those events all the time, I reckon you could be picking up some decent results at those.
Yeah, absolutely. Having sat down with the team, earlier in the year and discussing, like, just where my goals are at, it's an area that I haven't really had the time to develop.
Yep.
Because of my Olympic focus, but it's something I'm super passionate about. It's just finding the time and the resource to sort of, dump everything I can into it. It's definitely up there in my top two priorities for the next 2 years is my time trialing. And like you say, there's plenty of those shorter prologue races or even, time trials at Paris-Nice, Torino and stuff like that. They're all, I might not be at those races in the next year or so, but they're definitely big goals for me, for sure.
Yeah, like that Paris-Nice one, again, Bissiger, Cavagna, Roglic, like 13 Ks, even Matthews did pretty well at that sort of TT. You sort of alluded to it. What do you have to change now? What does a guy going from the track for the Olympic program, what do you have to change to become world tour ready? Or do you have to do any different training to say a normal guy going world tour who's already been racing U23, or is it just simple stuff like just ride your bike for lots of hours in the off season?
Yeah, I think it's a good place to start is just, sit on the saddle for a long periods of time. Obviously, like, I've trained more or less over the years, more and more for shorter efforts. So I've trained those training zones, like super high training zones, anything, we're talking like 600, 700 watts up, trained those zones a lot, but I haven't really trained the training zones where you spend 90% of the day sometimes in world tour, those lower, just burning calories all day. So for me, that's where a lot of it is. I need to just be able to burn calories all day long and then still be able to do those training zones, those high powers at the end of the race. So hopefully just hours on the bike. And I'm going to try not to lose too much of my muscle mass and weight, because my goals, I still want to do the team pursuit and I still want to do the bunch races on the track for the next few Olympics to come. So I don't really want to lose all the muscle and all the work that I've done over the last 5 years. That's part of it too, but just hours on the bike, mate.
Yeah. And who do you, when you've had the chance to watch World Tour, which guys do you sort of look at, or have you looked at as, obviously there's Morkov, et cetera. Do you, when you watch those guys, what do you see them doing as a lead out that people may not realize, wow, that's crazy what he just did there? Is it the fact that he's eating wind for way longer than an average lead out person can do? Is it timing? What do you see that's kind of special about the top guys like that?
Yeah, I mean, Morkov is in a league of his own, to be fair. His ability, when you watch him lead out, he's always got space and he always knows where his sprinter is. He doesn't even have to look over his shoulder to know that they're there or not. And when you're in that sort of bubble of the lead out in the last few Ks of a race, it's really hard to get an understanding of what's going on behind you. And yeah, I mean, he's on the track as well. His ability to like create space around himself and always have a way out is insane. And I think like his success in his area has helped that as well, because, you know, if you're coming up alongside Morkov, you're going to give him a few extra inches, you know, like the man's there for business sort of thing. Yeah. So, yeah, for sure. He's just ability to create space is insane.
And another different guy, I guess, who's coming up, who I think now is the second best leader man in the world, is Jonas Rickard on Alps and Phoenix. They just gave him a four or five year extension, which I'd never seen for a lead out man before. And because they basically, three guys won races for them, MVDP, Merlier and Philipson. And I think Rickard was a big part in a lot of them. He's sort of, again, I don't know, he's a track guy. I feel like I've seen Rickard doing scratch races before or something like that. I don't know. But he.
Possible.
He. Sort of similar profile to you, maybe a bit shorter he is. And yeah, just like he's more, he'll come from behind and then they just hit with like a really late punch, which I know you need a lot of power. It's pretty obvious. But when, say, someone on the left hand, if there's two trains, someone on the left is just holding at 65 Ks an hour, if you're trying to come up five wheel lengths, the speed you need to go is, you know, a lot faster, and the power to do that is, you know, insane, given that when you're already going that fast, it's to make a difference like that is insane. So he always impressed me as well, but I'm keen to see how you guys go. I reckon hopefully you and Mezgets, if you guys team up or whoever, I'm keen to see how Caden goes, because he's still pretty young, and I'm also keen to see how you go in a lot of those, like, I don't know your program yet. I assume you'll do like the sort of Saska Tour, maybe Tour to Hungary, sort of sprint. There's like four sprint stages in those races with Caden again next year. But yeah, what about sort of off the bike stuff, life logistics, which is often a bigger deal for the Australians. I know personally, moving over to Europe this year, have you been based in sort of Italy, Northern Italy for a while with the track program, or how long have you been living in Girona? Are you now sort of out after the Olympics fending for yourself entirely? How's that worked in terms of moving from Australia?
Yeah, well, I mean, so when I first joined the track program, we still had a bit of a setup with what we call the World Tour Academy on the road, which was based in Italy. And then that sort of got pulled away from Australian cycling for the last few years. But yeah, so after I'd sort of had a good summer this year back in Australia, I knew I was going to come to Europe for 2022 and 23. I made the decision to fly straight from Tokyo to Europe, having been in Australia for the last 2 years, and sort of spend these months setting up my life so that come January 1 or whenever I start racing in January, I'm ready to go. So yeah, I've been in Girona since the Olympics, or since the 9th of August. So I've set up here, and also I'm set up in Andorra now as well. So I'll be up there a bit when I can, over the next few weeks to get everything ready to go for the year. But yeah, more or less, we're just sort of fending for ourselves at the moment, setting up and getting ready for the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, Andorra, I think Court lives here, Asgren lives here, and like I reckon it helps a lot, because it's like you can go down to the Sorda de Gel down in Spain, and you don't have to do hills every day, but definitely it's just you got to go uphill everywhere or downhill everywhere. Although the weather's actually surprising, it's usually pretty good here, but it was good up until now. So I reckon don't be in a rush to come train here now. I think Hesink and Haig are just literally on turbo trainer life at the moment. Yeah. And I'm thinking about going back to Australia if I can for January, because I can't cop it. I'm not a skier. Like, do you ski? It always surprised me seeing world tour riders skiing. I'm like, gee, especially like big, you know, guys on huge contracts. Like, do you ski?
I haven't skied since I was maybe 12 or 14. We used to go to Mount Otham in the Victorian Alpine region quite a bit when I was younger, but not for a long time. But yeah, it's interesting to see a lot of the pros in the off season. They love going for runs and going skiing, which is like obviously not the safest of sports to be doing like in the off season.
Some of them shred it too. Like they literally do like backcountry skiing. Yeah. Okay.
Fair enough.
It's good fitness as well, especially that they have like the schema here is really, really big. Thanks, Kel, for coming on and being part of the Bike Exchange preview. We'll follow your progress closely next year on Bike Exchange and keen to see how you go. So best of luck with that. And thanks for joining the Lunch and Roost Cycling Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed that interview with Kel. Now onto the Team Bike Exchange JCO women's team. Just reviewing their season in 2021. They had 2 World Tour wins, 7 UCI wins, and were ranked 10th in the UCI ranking. So even though FDJ sort of had less wins or Canyon SRAM had less wins, they were probably more consistent throughout the year. But their best rider by far and away was Grace Brown. She won Vuelta a Burgos first stage and OxyClean Classic Brugge de Panna. Generally good throughout the classics. Amanda Spratt had a few, I think, health issues this year. And otherwise, Tennille Campbell won at Tour Feminin Lardèche stage, as well as Zygaard, Özkür Zygaard, who won Settimana Ciclista Valenciana at 4th stage. So she's a pretty handy rider at the Slovenian as well, who extended. But not a great year either, Benji, from the Bike Exchange team, particularly as we get to the transfers. Grace Brown has gone to FDJ. Like, that was a big move, and that was announced ages ago.
Yeah, certainly. It's, in my eyes, by far their best rider in 2021. And she was able to drive in, I think, 2 World Tour wins. I didn't check the list completely, but she won in Burgos A stage, that stage where there was this upsloping climb in the last few kilometers, she got away with 2 other riders and eventually ended up winning the kick sprint there. OxyClean, where she rode away as well. And obviously that top three at RVV is insane. So that's a very strong performance. I think that Grace Brown is one of the riders we've been very hyped about in the last couple of years, I would say, on this podcast. Well, last couple of years, we've been doing this for a year and a half, but it feels like years. I think that they're losing their best rider, and that's always a bad thing, is it?
I know, and perhaps it is different, I guess, to the men's in that they have Lucy Kennedy's retiring, Sarah Roy, their classics rider, who didn't really get the results this year. She's going to Canyon SRAM. She kind of had a similar season to Matthews. The riders they have coming in, like Kristen Faulkner, the American, she was really good at the later end of the season. She's sort of a late comer to the sport, but she won Ladies Tour of Norway first stage from a breakaway and then was good in breaks as well. Sarah Tizzett and the whole of that Ladies Tour of Norway, actually. She came 3rd, I think, on GC there. So she is a really good addition. She came from Team Tibco Silicon Valley Bank, or not Women's World Tour, so a step up for her. Keen to see her in the classics with them. They also have Ruby Roseman Gannon, who has done well in Australian domestic racing, like the Santos Festival of Cycling. She's like consistent top 5 results there at the start of this year. She's 23, I think just turned 23. And I don't know too much about Nina Kessler. Do you know much about Nina Kessler, Benny, Dutch rider?
I vaguely recall her getting 2nd in our Dutch stage behind Bike Exchange rider Tennille Campbell. So perhaps they spotted her in her wheel and were like, next year we can get 1st and 2nd in this race.
Alexandra Manley is a track rider so maybe she's replacing Sarah Roy, because they don't really have like a out-and-out sprinter that I can see either. So maybe she's that replacement. Alexandra Manley, 26 years old. What do you see as the focuses for this team, Benji? Are they just hoping Spratt and Sant Esteban can get some GC results?
I think it's a combination of getting results in GC, yes, but also I think there's good enough riders in here to win stages in races. Like, I think a Faulkner can win stages in the same way that she did in the first stage of, I think, Norway. I think she's good enough in time trials to stay relatively close. I think her climbing is where she lost the majority of her time in Norway, for example. I think Spratt is pretty punchy and is still a good Ardennes Classics rider. I think she top 10 every single one of the three this year, despite towards the end of the season not being the best self. But I think that if you can top 10 all three of the Ardennes Classics, you can win races, in my opinion. And those are the focuses for me. And the other one is also just try and win stages. I don't see a focus that I would say, oh, this rider is clear leader in that kind of race, and they have the ability of winning that race directly with that kind of rider. I don't see that in this team.
Yeah, I agree with you. Georgia Williams, they've got Kiwi, both road and ITT champ. She's the sort of rider who seems to be like not capable of leadership per se, but in any of those parkour, but yeah, could perhaps go on a break as breaks in stage races get more common in Women's World Tour, like we saw at, say, a Burgos or a Serratizit or Ladies Tour of Norway. But yeah, it's a mixed bag, and I think a lot is relying on, say, Sant Esteban at Clásica San Sebastián or Amanda Spratt to really come back to the level she was in not that long ago. Like Amanda Spratt in 2019, third in World Championships road race, winning stages in World Tour races, the Emma Kumin, Bira. She came third, Giro Donna. Like, she was top level in 2019, Amanda Spratt. And she's 35 now, I believe, or 34, 35. So it's whether she can come back to that level in 2022. I think that a lot is hinging on Amanda Spratt. And whether Women's World Tour has moved on from there, whether it's gone up a level and she sort of stayed the same, I don't know. But that's, I think, the state of play for them. I think Zygaard's pretty good, actually. For this, like, seventh at Tour de Féminine and won that race early on in the season. She just seems to be another break candidate. But yeah, I don't know about their over-under and wins. There's, like, as we said, there's extra races being added to the schedule for next year. I think... Well, they have two this year. I'm going to set the over-under at 2.5, Benji, and I'm going to take the under.
I'm going to take the over.
Okay, that's the first one I might have diverged on.
I don't know why yet, but based on they might have luck and win some races.
True, yeah. Mate, yeah, exactly. If Spratt comes back, she can win to herself, and then they just need one more. So, yeah, that's. I think they're just missing Sarah Roy, although she didn't win any races for them this year either.
Wouldn't Gigante have been a good signing for this team? Because she went to Movistar instead, but...
Yeah, I think she went to Movistar. Did she go to Movistar?
Yes.
So she was on Team Tibco, but I think she's been...
Injured.
Injured, yeah. I think she had... No, she had myopery. I'm reading this off her Instagram just to make sure I'm right. She had myopery... carditis back at the end of July when she felt unwell after racing in Tokyo, and so that takes a bit of time to recover from. So moot point, she's not on by exchange, but yes, I agree, Sarah Gigante, massively talented, and 7 days ago she put up a photo of her back on the bike, which is good to see. But yeah, there is some Australian talent still out there. Like, watch out for Rosamund Gannon, watch out for Gigante and Alexandra Manley as well. But that was our Bike Exchange men and women's preview, as well as the interview with Kel O'Brien. We hope you enjoyed it. Bike Exchange, I think both teams hoping for better seasons next year, and we'll wait to see if they are. But make sure you like the podcast you're watching on YouTube, players. Give us a review on podcast players and subscribe on your relevant platform of choice. Thanks to Benji, as always, for his dedication on the Sunday and his likelihood of winning the LFR poll. And we'll see you with the next one. Ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.